Imagine you built the weekend release on top of one frontier model. The evals passed. The prompts were dull in the best possible way. The fallback path existed, but it was mostly there for outages, quota spikes, and the kind of vendor incident where the dashboard turns amber for an hour. Then the model doesn't fail. The company doesn't go down. Access changes because a government order says this class of model can't be served the same way anymore. Today's first story starts there. The Verge and Axios both followed up on Anthropic's Fable and Mythos suspension, and the new reporting moves us past the first shock of the cutoff. The question now is narrower. What did Amazon reportedly surface? What did the White House act on? And how much of this is a technical security case versus a trust breakdown between the lab, its cloud partner, and the state?
Those versions lead to different builder responses. If the model can be steered into restricted behavior with a reproducible method, you want risk notes, eval artifacts, and maybe a policy limit. If major customers and governments don't trust the lab's release process, your fallback plan isn't just another API key. It is a governance dependency you can't unit test away.
Ryan, Braid covered the original suspension yesterday, Saturday, June 13th, in depth, so I'm not going to replay the compliance argument. Today's episode is a follow-up with five pieces. First, the Fable and Mythos reporting from The Verge and Axios, plus public claims from David Sachs and security people arguing about the underlying jailbreak claim. Then India and Europe, where the cutoff is becoming a sovereignty story. After that comes a labor number. Employers cited AI for about 88,000 U.S. job cuts through May, according to the Challenger, Gray, and Christmas figure surfaced by TechMeme. We also have KPMG and the professional evidence problem, reports, citations, filings, and legal work getting contaminated by generated text. We close with the smaller builder surface, power constraints, compound model routing, and a Sunday pile of developer tools that are useful without being world historic.
That last category matters because the giant policy story can make the craft feel abstract. On the same day, someone is deciding whether to trust a 200,000 token context window or pay for another coding agent subscription. Someone else is pasting a CQL schema into a web tool and asking whether their merge tool understands syntax or only lines. The story is big, but the work still happens in very ordinary places.
The Verge's follow-up says the Fable and Mythos ban followed concerns about model behavior that reached U.S. officials through Amazon. Axios has the adjacent account of Amazon, the White House, and Anthropic. David Sachs, posting on X, described a sequence. Anthropic released the models, someone found a serious failure, and the government responded. I'm being careful with the verb there. That is his public account, not an independent technical report.
Engineers need the missing artifact. A claim that a model can be jailbroken isn't one claim. Was it a general-purpose harmful completion bypass? Was it a cyber capability path? Was it reproducible across sessions? Did it require privileged access, a special prompt chain, tool use, or a particular policy surface? Those details change whether the response feels proportional.
Exactly. Katie Moussouris pushed a counterpoint on X, tying the discussion to a technical paper and to the broader export control reaction. Joseph Thacker, who spends his time around AI security and jailbreaks, also treated the story as a model risk question rather than only a politics question. I don't want to flatten those into one camp. Security people immediately asked for the mechanism. They weren't dismissing the risk. They were trying to identify the class of bug.
Without the mechanism, everyone argues at the policy layer because that is the visible layer. One side says frontier models can produce dangerous capabilities. Another side says model providers ship mitigations, and every powerful system has edge cases. Both claims can be true. The hard question is whether the demonstrated behavior crossed the line from known residual risk into release-stopping evidence.
There is also Amazon's role. If a cloud partner or major investor surfaces concerns to officials, that isn't a neutral notification path. It can be responsible escalation. It can also look, from the outside, like platform politics arriving through security language. I don't have a source that proves intent there, so I want to keep it at the level of incentive. Amazon has a commercial relationship with Anthropic, a security obligation to its customers, and its own exposure if a model on its infrastructure becomes a policy incident.
Operators should internalize that. The cloud partner isn't just hosting the bits. The cloud partner can become a witness, an escalation path, and in some cases a pressure point. If you are building on top of hosted intelligence, your dependency graph includes people who aren't in your vendor management spreadsheet.
Then the White House layer changes the available response. A lab can publish a model card, change a policy, roll a patch, or restrict a feature. A government can constrain access across jurisdictions. Once that happens, the practical question for builders isn't whether I agree with the order. It is, which parts of my product assumed that a specific model would remain available in a specific country for a specific use case under a specific policy interpretation?
That audit gets concrete fast. You have to list which product features call the model, which user locations matter, which data classes are involved, and which contracts promise the capability. You also need incident response language for the day the model disappears. Nobody wants to write that document. But if yesterday's access story was the alarm, today's reporting tells you where the alarm cable may run.
There is a trust question for Anthropic, too. This company has spent years telling the market that it is the lab with the safety vocabulary, the research posture, and the release discipline. That doesn't make it immune to mistakes. It does mean that when a release hits an emergency export control order, the reputational damage lands in the exact place Anthropic wanted to be strongest. Not raw capability, but judgment.
I would separate judgment from perfection. No lab can prove a frontier model has no dangerous behavior, but a lab can make the release process inspectable enough that serious outside people understand why it shipped, what residual risks were known, and what new evidence changed the decision. Right now, the public version has too many missing joints.
That is my read, too.
The Verge and Axios give us more reporting than we had yesterday, and Saks gives us the official policy-adjacent sequence. But the technical evidence remains under-described in public. If Anthropic, Amazon, or the White House wants developers to treat this as a narrowly justified risk intervention rather than a precedent about political access to models, they need to publish more about the class of failure without publishing a weaponized recipe.
Security advisories already have a pattern for that. You can say affected versions, attack preconditions, impact class, mitigation status, and disclosure timeline. You don't need to paste the exploit, but you do need enough structure that people can distinguish a catastrophic class break from a nasty but expected jailbreak.
TechCrunch's India piece takes the same Anthropic cutoff and moves it into a different room. In India, the debate isn't only whether this model should have been suspended, it is whether a national AI strategy can depend on frontier systems whose access terms may change because of US policy. TechMeme also picked up the India and Europe reactions, and Ethan Mollick's X comment fits the background mood. If major models are governed by geopolitical constraints, open and local alternatives start to look different.
Different, but not magically sufficient. I want to be a little annoying about that. A country can't tweet itself into frontier self-reliance. Open weights help with inspection, fallback, and local adaptation, but they still require compute, data work, deployment skill, security review, and people who know how to operate them. Sovereignty becomes a systems problem, not just a model license preference.
Yes, the altitude matters here. I don't think today's TechCrunch story proves India or Europe will immediately build a domestic Anthropic replacement. It shows the debate changing. A week ago, dependence on a US frontier lab could be treated as procurement, choose the best vendor, negotiate the contract, and monitor the cost. Now it is easier for officials and companies outside the US to say the vendor is also sitting inside another country's control system.
The developer version is smaller but familiar. If your product is built around one hosted model, and that model can vanish for users in a region, then your architecture is making a policy bet. Sometimes that bet is fine. Most products make policy bets constantly. The mistake is pretending it is only a latency or quality decision.
Compound routing and fallback start to become more than cost optimization under that pressure. If your routing layer can degrade from Fable or Mythos to another provider, an open model, or a constrained local path, you may preserve the feature even when the premium version disappears, but the fallback has to be designed around behavior, not names. The substitute model needs to know the same tools, produce the same structured output, fit the same safety requirements, and fail in ways your app can explain.
That is the under-discussed cost. People say, just swap models, as if the prompt is the interface. The interface also includes tool schemas, eval expectations, rate limits, system prompt behavior, refusal style, output formatting, context handling, and all the undocumented habits your product has learned to depend on. A policy cutoff turns those habits into migration work.
So the sovereignty story and the product story rhyme, but they aren't the same story. Governments ask whether national strategy should ride on foreign-controlled models. Builders ask whether their product should ride on a single provider. Both are asking how much of the future they are willing to rent.
And rent isn't always bad. Renting can be rational. It lets you move faster, and most teams don't have the budget to own every layer. But once access changes for reasons outside your ticket queue, you need to know which promises you made to users that were actually promises made by someone else.
TechMeme's labor item points to a Challenger, Gray, and Christmas figure. Employers cited AI for about 88,000 U.S. job cuts through May. That number is concrete enough to use and slippery enough to mishandle. It isn't a causal measure of how many jobs AI destroyed. It is a measure of what employers said when announcing cuts.
That distinction is everything. An employer can cite AI because automation replaced a role, because AI let managers justify a restructuring they already wanted, because investors reward that explanation, or because a team is shifting budget from headcount into software. The spreadsheet line says AI. The work story underneath may be several different stories.
Platformer's Molly Kinder interview, which The Agenda pairs with this, is useful because it keeps the labor discussion in that messy middle. The popular debate wants a binary answer. Either AI is replacing workers right now, or it is mostly hype. The evidence we keep getting is less tidy. Some tasks are being automated. Some jobs are being redesigned. Some managers are using AI as a budget narrative, and some workers are being asked to supervise tools that make their own roles easier to cut later.
The supervision part is the uncomfortable one for knowledge work. A person trains the workflow, writes the examples, cleans up the outputs, and then the organization decides the workflow no longer needs the same number of people. That doesn't mean the model did the whole job. It means the job became legible to management in a new way.
For builders, I think the useful discipline is to separate three questions. What work did the tool actually remove? What work did it move to a different person? And what work did it make easier to measure? If you only ask the first question, you miss why AI shows up in layoff rationales before the productivity evidence is clean.
And if you build internal tools, this affects how you talk about success. A demo that says we saved 8 hours can become a budget argument faster than the tool team expects. That isn't a reason to stop building useful systems. It is a reason to be precise about what changed. Cycle time, review burden, support volume, training needs, error rates, and who now carries the exception cases.
There is a temptation to make every labor item into a grand automation verdict. I don't think this one supports that. The 88,000 figure tells us AI is now a named layoff rationale at meaningful scale through May. It doesn't tell us whether each cut was technically caused by a model. The next layer of evidence would be company by company, which workflows changed, what tools were deployed, whether output held up, and whether the savings persisted after the first reorg announcement.
That last bit matters because a lot of organizations can cut people once. Fewer can absorb the hidden work that comes back 6 months later. Quality review, customer escalation, compliance checks, onboarding, and all the invisible coordination the old role used to do. If AI actually removed that work, fine. If it only made the org chart look simpler for a quarter, the cost comes back under a different name.
Indian Express reports that KPMG retracted an AI study after hallucinations and fake citations were flagged. TechCrunch has the same basic story. A major consulting firm pulled a report on AI usage because parts of the evidence base appeared unreliable. Separately, Forbes has a legal practice item about attorneys who claimed they were shocked to learn AI can hallucinate and are now in hot water.
This is the professional version of a bug escaping into production. The generated sentence is only the first error. The worse error comes later, when that sentence enters a report, survives review, borrows an institution's credibility, and asks other people to trust it. Once fake citations are in the document is no longer just wrong. It has made verification harder for everyone downstream.
That is why I keep coming back to evidence chains. A citation is a promise that the reader can walk backward from the claim to the source. A legal filing makes a stronger promise because the court depends on it. A consulting report makes a commercial promise because clients and journalists may treat it as a vetted account of the world. AI-generated text can be useful inside all of those workflows, but it can't be allowed to impersonate verification.
And the excuse window is closing. In 2023, a lawyer saying they didn't understand hallucinations was embarrassing. In 2026, it reads more like a professional controls failure. You don't need to understand transformer internals to know that a tool used for citations has to be checked against the cited material.
The Sky News report in today's sources is even more severe. A Derbyshire police officer investigated for allegedly using AI to create evidence in multiple cases. I am keeping that as background here because today's freshest professional practice item is KPMG, and recent episodes already touched legal evidence, but it belongs in the same category. Once generated material enters an evidence workflow, the issue isn't only model accuracy. It is provenance, custody, review, and accountability.
There is a practical design lesson here. Systems that generate professional text should make provenance cheaper than laziness. If a model cites a source, the interface should keep the source attached. If a user edits a claim, the source should be rechecked or marked stale. If a report is exported, the audit trail should travel with it, at least internally. Otherwise, the user has to be more disciplined than the tool is helpful, and that bargain fails under deadline pressure.
KPMG is more than a gotcha because consulting firms sell process as much as insight. Law firms sell judgment and duty. Police departments carry state power. These aren't casual writing surfaces. If AI text is going to enter them, the review process has to know what it is reviewing. A polished paragraph isn't evidence. A plausible citation isn't a checked citation.
And teams should stop treating hallucination as a surprising personality flaw of the model. In production terms, it is a known output risk. You design around known risks with constraints, verification, logging, and role boundaries. If the workflow can't afford those, it probably can't afford the generated shortcut either.
The infrastructure items today are less dramatic than the Anthropic story, but they aren't optional. Axios has a power piece about AI data centers and who pays for the electricity demand. The agenda also points to data center opposition, capital allocation, and an Alphabet financing item through TechMeme. I am going to keep this compact because Construct recently spent more time on compute capacity, but the constraint is worth naming. Model access can be political, and model capacity still depends on power markets, local permitting, and capital.
That pairing is useful. A frontier model can be unavailable because an order restricts it, because the capacity isn't there, or because the local grid and the local politics don't accept the data center needed to serve it. Those feel like different stories if you are reading headlines. They feel like one availability problem if you are operating a product.
OpenRouter's Fusion announcement sits inside that availability problem. OpenRouter is pitching a compound model API with a claim of fable-level intelligence at half the price. I am not validating that claim. We don't have independent benchmarks in today's sources, but the product idea is notable. If a router can combine models, choose routes by task, and preserve enough quality, then fallback stops meaning one weaker substitute model and starts meaning a composed system.
The verification burden moves, though. A compound model can improve cost or resilience, but it also makes behavior harder to explain. Which model answered? Which route handled the tool call? Did the system choose the cheap path for a task that needed the stronger path? If you are using it for drafts, fine. If you are using it for structured decisions, you need root logs and evals per task class.
Andrew Trask's X comment, as summarized by the agenda, pushes the broader idea that combinations may matter more than single model ownership. I like that as a hypothesis, especially after a week where one model family can become a policy incident, but I wouldn't treat it as proven market structure. The artifact to watch is whether compound systems can give builders stable behavior, explainable routing, and better economics under real workloads.
The Sunday craft pile brings us back to things you can actually try. The Hacker News post saying not to trust large context windows is a useful corrective to the magic window habit. A large context window can hold more text, but attention, retrieval quality, instruction hierarchy, and your own ability to maintain the task still matter.
The SQL to ER diagram tool is the kind of small thing I love. Paste SQL, get an entity relationship diagram in the browser. Nothing uploaded according to the HN title. That isn't a revolution. It is a sharp little workflow improvement for understanding a schema without signing up for another service.
Weave, The merge tool based on language structure rather than lines is the more speculative craft item. The promise is obvious if you have ever watched a line-based merge mangle two edits that were semantically separate. The hard part is language coverage and trust. A merge tool that understands syntax has to be reliably correct in the cases where a normal merge tool is dumb but predictable.
Stephen Boshinsky's post on AI coding at home without going broke and Chris Tate's X note about agent browser downloads are both in the practical zone. Developers aren't only asking which model is smartest, they are asking how to keep costs bounded, how to install tools without friction, and how to keep the workflow from becoming a subscription pile.
That is a good place to end the week, because it refuses to let the grand story swallow the working surface. Yes, model access is political now. Yes, labor, evidence, power, and routing all matter. But the person building tomorrow still has to choose a context strategy, a merge tool, a schema viewer, a fallback path, and a budget. The big system reaches the desk through those choices.
So the concrete test for Monday, June 15th, isn't whether everyone has a perfect answer to the Anthropic cutoff. They won't. The test is whether labs publish enough technical structure for the policy action to be legible, whether customers start asking model access questions in procurement, and whether builders turn fallback from a vague comfort phrase into a tested product behavior.
For me, the procurement question is the most immediate one. A buyer can now ask a vendor, what happens if your primary model becomes unavailable in my region or for my use case because of policy? That isn't an exotic question anymore. It belongs next to uptime, data retention, audit logs, and pricing.
And if the vendor answer is basically, trust us, that is a weaker answer than it was a week ago. The stronger answer names the alternate route, the quality drop, the user-facing behavior, the support process, and the contract boundary. It doesn't need to promise magic. It needs to say what breaks, what keeps working, and who gets told.
That also bridges back to the KPMG story. In both cases, the product isn't just the model output. The product is the claim you can make around it. This access will hold. This citation was checked. This route is logged. This report can be traced. And this feature degrades in a known way.
The weekend didn't give us one tidy AI story. It gave us a set of dependency tests. Model access has a policy dependency. Labor claims need workflow evidence. Professional reports need citation proof. Data centers need power and permission. Compound routers need root-level evaluation. And the small developer tools still have to earn trust in the ordinary places where work actually happens. Lennar Kess.